Hey, welcome to Roll Better, not an actual play, just a show about actually playing. I'm Miranda.
I'm Nate.
And our goal with Roll Better is to talk about gaming from the player side and provide players with tools to build exciting, entertaining, and engaging situations so that they can create a more enjoyable game for everyone at the table. Our format will alternate between discussions of our rules for role-playing and interview episodes. We aim for fast-paced, 30-minute episodes releasing about once a month. And you might be wondering, what do these folks know about role-playing and how can they help me be a better role-player? So, Nate, who in the hell do you think you are hosting this podcast?
Well, I'm Nate. And Miranda, I belong here. I have a right to be here. I've been playing tabletop games since the 80s with that red box so many of us started with. I was a stage improviser for a community improv theater for a few years, performed some amateur circus, trained facilitator, executive coach, executive trainer. There's a lot that I've done professionally that I think comes up in all sorts of ways in these little games that we play around the table or in those gigantic epic campaigns we play for multiple years. Enough about me. Miranda, who the hell do you think you are?
I don't know, Nate. I've been playing for 10 years. I was a baby in the mid-80s, so I definitely wasn't
But at least you were
then.
Born. You were born.
But at least I was born. I was born in the mid-80s when you were playing with the Redbox. And I've been playing for about 10 years. I don't often think I'm a great role player, but I think I've made a lot of growth over the past couple of years in role playing. And one thing that I've tried to do is focus on how I can be a better role player because I don't have any training, if you want to think of training, or I've had a lot of experience with different groups, but I wouldn't say that I have been professionally trained in any skills that would relate to role playing. I'm self-taught and I'm trying to get better. And I think by trying to get better is one of the ways that I've talked to you a lot about how to be a better role player and things that we see and observe in other people that we like and things we like that we do ourselves and maybe things that we observe and see in people that we think could be done better or tips that they could have to just engage more people at the table.
I love it. It sounds fun.
So, Nate, this is a tabletop role-playing-centered podcast. So, what have you been playing lately?
I am on a modern, I guess modern horror gaming kick. And that is all I've been doing or seeking out or trying to do for a while. I think it might have kicked off last year when I was waiting for a non-modern horror game to show up and instead discovered this thing called Public Access, which is sort of 80s and 90s gaming. And I got into that because I was waiting for another game to be released that didn't. And since then, I have been deep into 70s, 80s, 90s, horror, analog horror, everything like that. I've been playing all the Call of Cthulhu modern horror scenarios I can find. We're running a Signal to Noise game right now, which is set in the 90s. And we're doing one in a few weeks in the 80s in a missile silo. We're playing this game that just came out in alpha called Electric State, planning a mini campaign around that. And we've been streaming some public access on Symphony of Entertainment. I am, for whatever reason, deep into the 80s. My entire Spotify recommended for you right now is 80s synthwave ambient tracks, and it's pretty great.
Yeah, every time I play in one of those games, I have to do some, like, what was the 80s like? Because I don't remember it.
Well, you were a baby, so you're probably just thinking about playgrounds and merry-go-rounds and metal slides that would sear the skin off your legs. What have you been up to?
You know, variety is the spice of life for me. I will play anything once and then never play it again. And I honestly do a lot of that. Like you said, I'm doing public access with you on Symphony Entertainment. Most people that know me from anywhere is probably from the old ways because I've done so much with them through Horror on the Orient Express and Delta Green and running games over there. But I've been broadening my horizons lately and hanging out a bit with the folks over on the Miskatonic Playhouse and doing some streaming over there and love those guys and gals. So, you know, check them out if you haven't.
So this is a rule episode, which means, I mean, we have 15 rules that we, maybe 10. I don't know. I saw that look. Maybe
one. That number might change. That number's going to fluctuate. 73 rules.
Mm-hmm. We have 73 rules. And they're not rules. When I think of this, I think of post-it notes that I could put on my monitor that remind me of ways to engage or get into a game, get into a story, do something when I am feeling lost. So it's not, this isn't training. This isn't education. This isn't, you should do this and that's how to role play. This is, here's some tips, techniques, here's some mindset to have more fun. That's what we're trying to do. And for me, this all started, and I started talking about this and telling you, I think I told you about it first before anyone, like, this is what I do. It starts with this rule one, which is talk to the players, not to the GM. And I think there's so much that happens on a table that can be enhanced, sometimes fixed, sometimes made more fun, made more hilarious, if you talk to your fellow players in character versus directing your conversation towards whoever's running the game. And so what do we mean by that?
Instead of directing your questions or your exploration directly towards the GM, I think we've all been in games where either you're that player and you don't know the other players, or there's another player at the table where all of their interactions are with the GM. And really that cuts down on other players' playtime and time that they get to spend in the game, because they're directing a lot of questions to the GM. They're exploring a room that maybe you're all in, but they're looking at the desk and they're asking the GM what's on the desk and things like that. Instead of directing all of your questions towards the game master, engage with your other players. Ask them to come look at this with you. Have side conversations. Come up with things that you think are going on, or saying, like, I don't want to go into that house right now. And you'll build a deeper character that way, because you'll get more involved in their emotions and their feelings, and also their relationship with other players. And so it just really kind of deepens the role play experience in general when you take the time to talk to other players.
And I think that's important, because when I'm playing a game and when people are playing a game, you can think of it as two different sides. You can be going inside of the game and going internal to what's happening in the game, or you can go external. And you can go external to what you know about the game system, or you can go external towards the game master. And the more that you can keep the game focused on the internal pieces, the conversations between characters, the interactions with things that are in the game, the easier it is to stay within the game, and the easier it is to make those interactions within the game deeper, richer, more fun. Your thing about, oh, I don't know if I want to go. I could ask you in game, wow, that house that we're looking at, you know, that is the scariest looking house I've ever seen. The windows are all boarded up. Lawn hasn't been cut. I am terrified of that. Or I could ask the game master, hey, does my character see anything about this house that I would be afraid of, that my character would be afraid of? And those two things get to the same place. They introduce and they probably get an answer around that. But one, you're taking a little bit more control and authority from your character. And two, you're introducing and bringing in another character versus this external eye in the sky GM into that. And I get why you might forget to talk to other players. A lot of our games are maybe pickups. You might be playing at a convention, sitting down with a bunch of strangers. The GM's in charge. And so it might feel more comfortable or obvious or easy to direct things towards the GM. They're the ones that are in charge. They're an authority. You might be nervous. You might be looking for or playing this to find out answers, and the GM is the one with all the answers. So it makes sense that you might sometimes forget to talk to the players, but that's where that sticky note really helps. Interact with the game through your interactions with the players, and magic happens. That's where all these weird little interactions, relationships, moments that you're talking about long after the game can occur, because you're building it with each other, and you're doing it by actively introducing and acting out through the other characters in the game.
You know, Nate, you bring up a good point about asking the GM whether there's something about the house that I should be scared of, or stating these are the reasons why my character is afraid to go into this house. Not only are you adding to a scene, but also there are plenty of times when a GM gets to influence how your character feels. Maybe you have to make a power roll, or just for a variety of reasons. sometimes you can take that power into yourself and be the character rather than letting the GM control how your character feels. If you want your character, if you think going into this house, my character would probably be scared or be brave or be go charging forth if that's what you want to do, rather than letting the GM be in control of how you feel. You get to be that character and you can feel a certain way. Feel the way that you think your character should feel in the moment and be in that moment with your character.
Yeah, we think I think of that as inhabiting a character. And it becomes much easier to inhabit a character and fully embody a character when you give that character things that you can remember and play with. So that's the character that charges in. That's the character that's afraid but still does it, but is cowardly while they're doing it.
There was a really fun moment in the Teens in Space game that we played. Moments, I will say, because it came up over and over and over again, where you decided at some point that your character was claustrophobic. And then anytime you were in, it didn't even have to be a tiny space, you would kind of start freaking out. And it was so much fun. And then people were trying to calm you down at times. You were hyperventilating. It added so much to the story. I didn't tell you that you felt that way. You just decided we're in this cave, even though it was kind of massive. We're in this cave and there's something down this hole. I'm scared. I'm claustrophobic. And then it came up other points in time during the game. Later on, four sessions down the road, and you're in another situation where you're in an enclosed space and you're freaking out.
I remember that.
And it just added so much to your character.
And when I did that, and it was like first or second, it was early.
Yeah.
When I did that, it was because I wanted to share time. And I didn't want to share it by just saying, well, I'm not going to go down there. The others go down there. I needed a reason. And so I introduced, oh, that's the reason. I'm just going to go with that reason. And then it was so pivotal later, because then you put me in jail. You were running the game. So then you put me in jail and I was able to, I'm having a complete meltdown. Because you put me in jail and everyone knows I'm claustrophobic, because that's another rule. We'll talk about this. You give yourself one thing to play with and play with that one thing, and it's so much easier. And that was, yeah, that was doing that. But then you also are giving gifts to other people to interact with. Now they know my character's claustrophobic. They can put me in they can shut the closet door. And it's hilarious because they know what's going to happen or whatever, all those things. So yeah, that makes your gameplay easier. Those aren't like, skill and education. Those are just shortcuts to have more fun.
So, Nate, you're at a con game. Like, you brought up con games. And, or it might not be a con game. You maybe just started a group with a bunch of people that are nervous because some of them don't know each other. Half of them are your friends from one area of life and half of them are your friends from another area of life. And you are nervous about them meeting each other, or you're nervous about meeting new people. Other people are probably nervous about starting with a new group. How do you talk to other players? Like, what do you talk about? How do you get that started?
Personally, I try to introduce stuff that's already present or already there, because I don't want to overcreate. I don't want to overcomplicate things, the world, the game, by creating new stuff constantly. So I'll take a look. If I sit down at a con game, the first thing I'm going to check is what can I pull out of my backstory, if there is one? Is there a history? Do I have any shared relationships already laid out? Do I have anything like that? Do I have any items in the inventory that I could pick at and say, here's something? Worst case, I'll flip the character sheet over. I'll look at my skills. I'll look at, what am I really good or bad at? And I'm going to try and pick some things that are already there and then introduce them by talking about them in some way that I can play with and have fun with another character. So if I get sit down at my con table, I get the character sheet handed out to me. You get your 3 minutes to look at the character sheet before the game starts. And I'm looking, I'm like, this character has a high climb skill. That's weird. I don't know why, but I might look at that and say, that's weird. So I'm going to play with that and use that. And my first chance, hey, have you ever, I love going climbing. Have you ever gone climbing? I go climbing every weekend. And so I'm going to try and go in that second story window. Just a way to introduce my high skill or I'm going to look and I might say, you know what? I'm going to hold back here. I've got my lighter. I'm flipping it open. I'm just lighting it and I'm flipping it closed, lighting it, flipping it closed. It's a nervous tick I have. I might introduce something like that for other characters to see or for me to play with. Even better if I introduce that when everyone's trying to be quiet, stealthy, sneak around, and I'm doing something that people can immediately respond to. So give easy clues and easy gifts for other people. I might want to introduce some shared history with another character. And so I might just turn to another character and without introduction or preamble, wow, this really reminds me of that job in Vienna. We had a tight scrape, but we got out of there. I think we can get out of here too. Doesn't have to be great acting. It doesn't have to be some scripted event that has a beginning, middle, end. It can just be a thing that now you can establish that sort of shared history with another character and do something with it. What about you?
Yeah, well, I think that I actually learned this from you, not related to role-playing, just related to interacting with people, was how do you like socialize so well with people? You said you just ask people questions about themselves. And I think a really easy way to get another person involved with you, and I think I see it a lot at tables where you pick one person and you're like, that's going to be my buddy for this game. And I'm going to build a connection with them. And then other people start doing that. And then once you know about their characters, you can kind of tag on to those and bring more people in. But asking someone a question, because then that definitely involves the other person. And it can be something like, don't you think it's weird that this saloon is empty? There's no one behind the counter. We all got invitations to show up here. And I'm not sure what's going on, but I don't like it at all. And then that other person can either decide for their character that they're like, it's fine. Oh, I know this person, or it took me 10 hours to get here. This better pay off, whatever we're being hired for. Or maybe they're going to brush it off, or maybe they're like, yeah, it is weird. And if I were you, I'd have your pistol ready because something's going to go down here. And then you've brought them into the story. You've gotten their perspective on something, and you only had to do a little bit of work for it. So if you aren't sure what to do, I think asking another player a question in character is a really good way to get started and to just build a relationship with that other player. Because now that character knows how my character feels. I kind of know how that character feels. And I've gotten a little bit of an idea of how they are and if I want to bounce off of that a little bit more. And then he could say, get your pistol ready. And I say, I've never shot a man before. And then we're kind of going back and forth.
Shared
now
backstory, yep.
Shared backstory. And now he knows, oh, I might be nervous. When it comes time for me to fight, I might not fight. I might run, you know, I might be scared. I might hide behind something. Or it's my first time shooting and it's a bad shot and I've never shot before. And so we're just like building little bits of a character together with that person and building that relationship with them.
I love that. I'm going to, one good, one bad. I love that and interacting and asking questions. One thing to watch out for is defaulting to questions. And I say that because our default when we're stressed is to ask questions, is to create new stuff or go blue. And go blue is you start swearing. You start talking about sex, you start talking, it's just, that's our brain reacting to stress a lot. And asking questions, I 100% agree with you. You don't want to be the person, though, that is asking all of the questions at the table as if you're directing the group around that. And so I always try to remember, okay, if I'm asking a question, I also need to contribute something. And one thing that I love is, and you'll sit down at a con table or you sit down with a group of friends and you know, oh, maybe one person is less engaged or more shy, more introverted. Maybe they're newer. Like that always happens. Listen to that person when they are introducing something, their character or this or that. Ask questions about something they introduced and help them develop something that they've already introduced. And it's magic. You have your pirates on a pirate ship. And someone introduces and they talk about their parrot that they have on their shoulder a little bit more than anything else that they've introduced. Interact with that parrot. Ask questions about that parrot. Oh, I had a parrot. I had to eat it. It was terrible. We were stranded. It was a week long and Oh man, I still miss whatever. But and if you can direct your questions to things the person is already introduced, or you have a really good chance of developing that relationship.
Yeah, and it helps it with bigger tables, because a lot like con games I've been in have had 6-7 people. It can help to take notes about that person's character, because you don't know these people all the time, and so you may forget things about their character, or forget little snippets. Write down a note. That's the parrot person, so that I know when I'm directing my conversation at them that I'm going to involve that, or that I'm going to call back to it later.
In my head, in my language, that's giving myself a gift. If I interacted with that parrot early on, at the middle of that giant boss battle, they've just thrown fireballs down onto the whatever battlefield. There's lava, there's eruptions, there's, oh my gosh, Magnolia, how's your parrot? It's just a little tiny moment that is fun, and it calls back, and nothing's better than a callback. And you improvise a lot, I improvise a lot. I think the key and secret that a lot of people don't understand about improvisation is it's best when you have a big plan around it. And not like what you're going to do, but how you're going to go into an improvised situation. So I always have a plan. If I'm going to sit down with a brand new table, I'll make a plan around what I want to do with each one of those characters up front. And it'll be simple, and it'll be clean, and it'll be very brief. But I might say to myself, okay, with each one of these people that I'm playing with, I want to make one in-joke or one reference that we build together by the end of the game. And that one reference, that's the only reference I really want to interact and play with or do jokes around for each of those. Or I may make a different kind of plan, but I go in specifically deciding I'm going to create a character that has three terrible faults. And my scheme, my goal, my plan is everyone makes fun of my character for at least one of those faults by the end of it. Stuff like that. And it just helps me remember throughout a 4-hour game or maybe a campaign or that what I'm trying to do. And it helps me have more fun because I'm not as stressed at trying to figure out what to do. I'm trying to play out and work on this little internal mini scheme that I've made for each game. Do you do anything? Do you have any plans or schemes like that when you play?
I'm not a big planner. I tell people this all the time that I don't know my character until I'm actively playing it. And even then, I probably don't know my character for the first half an hour or an hour. But the way that I get my character in my head is to start deciding on those features. And a lot of times it comes up through interaction with other people. And whether it's deciding that I'm going to do something, it doesn't matter how bad I am at it, I'm convinced that I'm good at it. And like, maybe that's my character, that I'm going to be in charge. I'm going to try everything, and I've garbage stats. And that's okay, because honestly, that makes a more fun game when someone is trying something knowing that they're going to fail it, because there's so much fun to be had in failure. There's even more fun to be had in failure than there is in success when it comes 100%. To role-playing. But I don't go in with a big plan, and I should probably work on being more intentional. I think it's because I'm just usually so focused on what is this character that I'm playing that I don't have a plan. It's like, I mean, like I said at the beginning, I'm trying to get better. So I feel like that's something that I personally can work on, is being a little more intentional when I go into a game with what I want to do with my character. And that doesn't mean planning out everything, because I think that some people's Achilles heel is that they go into a game knowing exactly who their character is, and they don't waver from that, even if it's not feeling right at the table that you're at. I am the opposite of that. I go in blank slate, and I think I could work on building some more of that intentionality.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. You sit down, I give you a character sheet, and I give three other people character sheets, introduce this game, haunted house, you're 15, oh my gosh, where's your little sister gone? Looks like into the house. Let's do character intros. Where are you starting to build that character in your head? How are you deciding, okay, this is going to be this or that?
That's the problem. I don't. So my default character is a generally nervous character. I don't know why role-playing that or improving that comes naturally to me, probably because I am in general a nervous person. So that is like my default character. And so if nothing else, I'll go there. But in like a 15-year-old haunted house, like if we're talking Kids on Bikes, there's, when you play Kids on Bikes, your character is an archetype. So you're either the scout, or you're the jock, or you're the mathlete. And that can lead a lot into who your character is, because you kind of know, are they going to lead with brain? Are they going to lead with brawn? Are they going to be brave, or will they maybe be fearful? Will they lead with jokes? It's a little harder with like Call of Cthulhu, where your occupation is kind of that identifier. And I can be an accountant, and I can be a nervous accountant, or I could be very numbers. I'm probably very numbers focused, but there's less guidance there. And so I kind of feel like I fill a role. So I default blank slate and then see what the other players are playing. And if there seems to be a void of no one is leading this group, then I will be the leader. If there's a void.
Oh, my least favorite role.
The leader? Yeah, I know. Ugh. It's hard. But if there is a void of someone that needs to relieve tension, then I maybe will be kind of the funnier, sillier one. Or
so it's interesting to me that you say your default is the nervous character. I've played a lot with you. And I've seen you play a nervous character, but in my head, a nervous character holding back, not jumping in to do things, not being the one to put themselves. You might play a nervous personality, but you're not holding back. I don't see you holding back when you're playing in general. Maybe
my nervous
purposefully.
Character.
So
Dr. Aaron Weber
you...
is a nervous character.
Yeah. Yeah. I just when you say nervous character, I think, oh, that's the character that everyone's going to have to convince to do something, go in. And I don't see
you can
doing
be nervous
that.
And brave at the same time, Nate.
I don't understand that. People are one thing.
Maybe that's your problem. No, you can be, I think you can be nervous and brave at the same, just because you can have a nervous demeanor. And be kind of held back questioning things. But then at some point, we've all been in games where you're planning or questioning for like a half an hour.
Or shopping.
And then some, or shopping or ordering food or asking what's on a menu. And at some point, someone has to make a decision. I can play a nervous character and still be able to make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think nervousness for me is more in demeanor and voice and tone and kind of that like questioning things all the time, but still being competent enough to be able to do things.
So I think that is probably a future rule, how to play different personalities, but also how to, with whatever those person that personality is, move things forward, move the story forward, move the adventure forward.
I'll put it down as 74.
So we got a new rule already. So as soon as you get through these 73... that'll be that next episode. That'll probably be in a couple months then. Nonstop recording for next 3 months. We're talking a lot about playing. This and the way GMs can support this is first allowing it. If you're playing, Miranda says, and I'm wearing this and I have this and here's these tools I have on my belt, let it happen. You know, maybe there's a mechanical thing that has to be different, but, you know, Miranda's character can definitely have those tools on the belt if they're not going to try and break, but let most of that stuff happen. But those questions, when your characters are having these conversations as a GM, introduce answers to those questions when they show up in a way that doesn't divert attention away from the characters. That's the second thing you can do as a GM. Maybe it's a chat that you're answering a question in. Maybe you're thumbs upping or you're nodding yes when someone is, and I'm going to look and open this book and it's written in a language that I can read. Oh, I know this. And as the GM, you can just encourage this without jumping in and encourage it, but show the table that you're encouraging that co-creation. And the GM is always responsible for the macro world. And here's the larger picture of the world. Here's the larger events that are going in. The characters can be in charge of the micro world if it's agreed upon on the table. What is actually happening in the very specific moment? And that can be a very fun way to play, is to share that.
I think it's one of the most enjoyable ways to have character evolution in games too. I know that's harder in a one-shot, but you still can have character growth in a game. And then there's something to me that's so rewarding about a character growing or changing, even if that change, if anyone listened to Horror on the Orient Express, I mean, Maggie started off very just sure of herself and ended that way, but also insane. But there was at moments times of hesitation and times of doubt and times where she thought or knew that she probably wasn't going to make it out alive, whereas at the beginning she was so sure of herself. And so much of that came out of me talking to other players and moments that I had with Martin or with Rena or with Spike or with Giles, and those conversations that we had, or people in character expressing how worried they were about Maggie's character. And even if Maggie could deny that all they wanted, hearing those conversations and being in those conversations was such a good source of personal growth that it added so much to the story to just have those conversations. So even if it's not necessarily moving the plot forward, and this works especially well in longer campaigns, using those conversations with other players to advance your character's personality, make changes. Your character is not a static thing. Your character can change at any time. Your character can grow. Your character can decide that whatever thoughts they had no longer fit into the pattern that they have in their brain of the way that they think that things are, because they've seen these things. And so now the schematic they have doesn't fit. And so a person and a character are allowed to change and let these interactions change you. Let them be a guiding force for who you're going to become.
Nice.
Thanks.
So rule one, when in doubt, talk to the players, talk to each other. Don't rely on the GM, the eye in the sky, to guide the play, and see what happens when you direct the majority of your conversation and your action with the other players you're playing the game with, that you're going on this grand adventure with. Well, this has been lovely, Miranda.
Thanks. It has been lovely for our first episode. I'm excited for more, and I'm excited for interviews and having other people on.
Me too. Me too. I'll see you in person in a few weeks at Chaosium Con. See you in person in Providence at Necronomicon. And I'll see you next game and when we record next.
Hi, Nate.
Bye, Miranda.